You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Today, we're going to be looking into the EO and the implications behind it. We've got a couple of callers that we're going to be speaking to, right, Sharad?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at really the policy options before us when looking at the law and order problem. And we're seeing how perhaps, you know, there are a lot of calls out there, a lot of debates. And the question is whether we're going to go for a quick fix or are we going to think very carefully about these issues. But I wanted to...
And the debate continues over the abolishment of the emergency ordinance and whether that has actually contributed to the increasing crime that we've been seeing in the past few months. So there's been talk that, you know, it infringes on human rights. However, other people say, you know, without it, it's the price community has to pay.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be coming to some of the advocates of that position. So we have a criminologist coming on, and we also have James Nyagam from Suhakam, the Human Rights Commission, that's been quite critical about calls to return to the emergency ordinance. But before that, I thought it would be best to ground our discussion about these policy options with a discussion I had with a lawyer about the question of the really existing emergency ordinance. I mean, people might look back with rose-tinted glasses about the emergency ordinance, but really, how did it operate? I speak to Fadia Nadwa Fikri, she's a human rights lawyer, about the emergency ordinance. And in particular, we start with a case of squatter clearance that involved the use of a provision within the emergency ordinance laws.
In Ladang Bukit Jalil, clearly they are using one of the EO legislations, which is the Essential Clearance of Squatters Regulation 1969, to evict former Ladang Bukit Jalil workers from their homes. And this is clearly an abuse of process and arbitrary, because the developer, for example, can or the DBKL in this case, they can easily resort to the procedures in the rules of court, where they have to file an application, and that application can be challenged by the workers, by the residents of Ladang Bukit Jalil, instead of using an arbitrary provision under the EO to evict people without being heard.
Now, for many people, when the issue of the emergency ordinance is evoked, we think of, you know, secret societies, we think of gangs, we think of hardened criminals. How did the EO get used for issues like squatters and, you know, negotiations that happen between, you know, communities and developers? So why is there a provision within the emergency ordinance?
That is the question that we are still asking until now, because, you know, emergency ordinance clearly is used in times where there is an emergency. But in this case, you know, we can argue that it's no longer relevant, because we are now living in a country where the system is working perfectly and we are no longer under emergency, and we have a rule of law that we have to follow every time we want to take an action against someone. And in this case, it's clearly an abuse of process, because we have a legislation that is sufficient to protect both parties' rights. If you want to challenge, for example, the ownership of the land, you can resort to the rules of court, where you have to follow proper procedure, where everyone will be given the right to be heard, and it's not going to be abused. But as you can see, again, you know, it's open to abuse, where people will just resort to this draconian law in trying to get something, because they don't have to prove it in court. They don't have to do investigation, for example, because if I can highlight one case that I did in, I think, 2 years ago with regard to EO, where a teenager, he was arrested for suspected motorbike theft, where, you know, if you look at this case, the nature of the case, it can be easily investigated under the penal code. And the funny part about EO is that you can never challenge the actions of the police throughout the conduct of their investigation, because it will never be brought to court. And in this case, the notice of arrest, it stated that the boy was arrested by the roadside, where in actual fact, he was arrested in his home in front of his parents and siblings. So even that is concocted, or it's wrong. And this false information, this false fact can never be challenged, because there is no opportunity for parties to be brought to court. So this is the danger of the EO, where it can be used in almost everything to justify the government action and the authorities' action without the scrutiny from the court. And this is very, very dangerous because, the authorities might say that, oh, see, we have arrested some people in relation to this case. But in actual fact, we don't even know whether they are the real suspects or these are the real criminals that committed certain crimes that they are alleging. And the court can never verify that. And we will never know whether these people are guilty of the crimes.
There are people now who are calling, some quarters are calling for a return of the EO, but they're saying, okay, let's put aside the restricted residence provision in the EO and let's refine the legislation in order to there are more checks and balances. Do you think that the EO can, in fact, be effective? Do we need legislation of this sort?
No, definitely we don't need this legislation because all we need is enforcement and effective investigation by the police, which is still a failure until now. That is why the civil society organizations are calling for the setting up of IPCMC, because for a simple case, for example, if a person lodges a report, for example, for housebreaking, there is no investigation done with regard to that report, and the police, they are not answerable, and no one will actually ask them, why didn't you investigate this case? Because personally, I had that experience where my house was broken into. I looked at a police report, and they just like, okay. And I'm like, can you come to my house now and at least to see whether you can get some fingerprints? And they're like, oh, we'll come later. They were not interested. And they didn't even investigate. They didn't call me for a statement taking. And imagine how many cases pending in the police stations. So basically, they're not doing their job. They're not really investigating cases when the cases are reported and lodged, complaints were lodged. And that's the real problem. It's not about legislation. You can have hundreds of legislations, but if there's no enforcement, there's no point of having these legislations. And if you want to bring back the EO and saying that, oh, we're going to apply it strictly, it still doesn't make sense because the EO, as you know, it is a preventive detention and it denies the right to trial, which is a safeguard in itself, where if you bring the case to court and you will get the police to testify, you know, how they conducted their investigation and all that. So they will be answerable in some way with regard to their investigation, with regard to their accountability. So, but this won't happen if EO is in place, because the police will arrest and then close the case and say that we have settled this case. And the court can never scrutinize whether it is true or whether the people that they arrest are the real criminals in this case. So we will never know and we will never find out. So this is the abuse that we're talking about, and it's very, very dangerous because the authorities can just use it to close cases and say that, oh, we have investigated and we have arrested these people, case solved.
That was Fadia Fikri, a human rights lawyer. We would, you know, when I talked to her about this, I mean, she brought it down to some really basic things. Many of us have, you know,
experienced it,
like break-ins and stuff. The question is effective policing. I think that's the central thing she's saying.
Yep.
And the question is the legislative support for that does not necessarily require draconian laws like the EO.
Right.
She also, I think, signals several things in her, you know, her discussions just now. She says, basically, we need to have legislation that is specific to our time and our problems, not something taken from the past. And that's what the emergency ordinance is. She also talked about judicial scrutiny that is crucial to getting police work, you know, making sure that there is no abuse. Abuse happens in the form of collusion between police and powers that be. Also, you know, making sure that this is not a cover for incompetence. We're going to come back or with more, someone from Suhakam and a criminologist to debate this issue further.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutan and David Chu. And today we'll be talking about the emergency ordinance and what policies can be in place to look at law and order in the country. There's been talk about reviving the Prevention of Crime Act 1959. And we've got on the line with us two people to give their views. We've got Associate Professor Dr. P. Sundramurthy, who's the principal investigator of the Research Team on Crime and Policing from the School of Social Sciences in USM, as well as James Nayagam, the Suhakam Commissioner. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to start with Professor, with Dr. Sundramoorthy. You, in your press statement recently, said that basically the question was our safety versus liberty and democracy. Now, do you think we need to frame the discussion in those terms?
Of course, in my brief letter to the press in relationship to the increase of violent crimes and the usage of a law similar to the EO, we're not saying reinstate EO because we did recognize that there were some abuses in relationship to this preventive law. But we said we need a similar law to deal with hardcore criminals, syndicated crime members, gang members in relationship to the types of cruel and violent acts that they are involved in. And what is important to know is that there must be a proper, whatever type of law, civil law that is going to be introduced, and I'll leave that to the legal experts, that it must give police the equipment to effectively deal with cases which are in all reality very, very difficult to prosecute and bring them to justice.
Okay, I want to come back. I would like to pick up on that question of the difficulty in prosecution. One of the things that we've discovered over the years with EO is that, in fact, the police have been insulated from judicial scrutiny. They've not had to be effective in their policing necessarily. And, we might actually have a police force that, if they were given the tools might actually be better policing techniques and investigation resources to do those things. Do you think that's where the problem lies, not in fact in legislation that insulates them from judicial scrutiny?
I mean, we don't deny the fact that there are issues with the EO itself. What we are attempting to explain or propose here is that this is one of the very many strategies Polisi Raja Malaysia has been utilizing to deal with the so-called group of hardcore criminals. But the point is, yes, it has an impact on liberty, it has an impact on our rights and so forth. But please remember, laws like this is only applicable to a few thousand people in this nation versus the 27 or 28 million people who are law-abiding citizens. So a little bit of sacrifice on our part is not going to hurt the majority in society.
Right, I want to ask James, Suha comes come out very strongly saying that this is a retrogressive step if we went back to the emergency ordinance. And Suha Hakam has a position that was stated by its chairperson, Tan Sri Hashmi Agam, that that they see a need for the authorities to enhance effectiveness of crime investigation, prevention monitoring mechanisms, as well rehabilitation programs for former detainees. What's your take, James, on this charge that, if we have the return of the EO, it will only be directed towards hardcore criminals instead, and as we've seen in the past, teenagers and labor activists?
Well, we are not supporting any wrongdoers, that I must establish that. The fact that we are concerned is about to do with accountability. What happens to a person after he or she is arrested? One must take into account that there is not going to be trial or access to a lawyer. The length of detention, which is renewable, there is no sense of accountability as how the person is treated, what happens to that person. And then the question is, who decides as to the period of detention? Now, having all this, what we have done is we have conducted our surveys. We have visited centers of detention. For instance, the whole group of us went down to Machang, where at one time they detained young boys as young as 15 years of age. And when we actually met them, we realized that they were taken in because they were riding motorcycles illegally. And they had been there for more than 2 years, deprived of education, deprived of a rehabilitation program. And then at the expiration of their 2-year term, it was at the eve, they were renewed for another 2 years. And the conditions that there were boys were detained because they had no access to lawyers. They didn't have the funds. Some of them had come from poor families. Now, imagine, with all this background, we are churning out trigger-happy young men full of resentments to the lifestyle and to society. So at one side, we have a law, but on the other side, look at what can happen. You know, what happens if it were our own children, our own son or daughter? How would our response be?
Right. Gentlemen, I just want to...
Mr. Nigam and others like MP Tony Pua have all quoted this one specific case in the last 1 month in regards to this motorcycle thieves who were detained. This is where we also agree that there was abuse, and these types of abuse needs to be curbed. There needs to be checked and balanced in a law similar to the EO, and it is not the Minister of Home Affairs who makes the final decision. It has to be a body made up of experts, judiciary, personnel, etc. But please remember that they were already putting aside this one particular case. Most of these people who have been detained were people who have been involved in various secret society activities, syndicated crime activities, and other criminal acts of violence. And we can't deal with these people effectively if we're going to bring them to the criminal court due to the fact that, scientifically speaking, it is not easy to prosecute someone for types of crimes where physical evidence does not exist, or is difficult to obtain, or witnesses are not willing to come forward. I mean, we don't want to condone any law that will be abused by any law enforcement agency or the criminal justice system.
I have to disagree
in general. But what we feel is more important is that we must do something to equip our police to deal with this recent spate of violent crimes that's going on, and most of it
gentlemen,
committed by the people who have been released as per the Minister of Home Affairs statement and the IGP. It's like we had opened the gates of hell.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to wrap this up now. Thank you so much for your thoughts. We appreciate your deferring opinions on this, but we will keep a watching brief on the policies that will be put in place.
I think we need to come back to it. Clearly, there are so many issues to be discussed.
To be tapped, yes.
And we're going to bring you back on at some time in the future to look at this issue further. Judicial scrutiny versus, you know, dealing with hardcore criminals.
And what kind of crime control strategies can be put in place opposed to bringing back draconian laws. So we will look at all that at a later date.
Thank you so much. That was James Nigam from Suhakam. And
as well as the Associate Professor Dr. Sundramurthy
from University of Science Malaysia.
And that's been an interesting discussion indeed on OE and its merits and demerits as well. Okay, when we come back in just a minute or so, we're going to give you the local business news.
BFM 89.9, the business station.